What's the matter?
There's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water?
Hey guys, welcome back to Spooky Tuesday, a weekly podcast where we're breaking down all of our favorite slashers, thrillers, monster movies, and black comedies on the new scariest day of the week. I'm Sydney Thompson.
I'm Monica Height.
And I'm Chelsea Duff.
And this week, Alien Month continues with the reason that I'm doing Alien Month, which is different from the reason that Chelsea's doing Alien Month and is different than the reason that Sydney is doing Alien Month. But this one's for me, baby.
I'm just doing Alien Month because
Sydney,
I had no choice.
Outvoted.
Yeah. I was going to say, does Sydney have
Sydney's reason
reason
is that she's just one solo person out in the rain on her own. So
I think I'm just along for the ride, baby.
Sydney
okay,
doesn't
you chose
know that
Mars
actually
attacks.
That's true. That's true. Attacks? She chose Mars Attacks.
Yes,
and what she doesn't know. Oh, I almost said it. Okay. Our fifth Tuesday is actually a gift to her. So actually all of Alien Month is for her. She just doesn't know it yet, and she won't until after she's ready to discuss.
It's all for you, baby, Sydney.
A gift I've been trying to give to her for 6 months plus. And she's finally in a position where she has to accept it.
Yeah. So next week, maybe that will be Sydney's week. But this week is for me. It's very Monica coded.
It's so Monica coded.
Wow, it's so Monica coded. That right there was for Adam because he hates it when I say that. Anyway,
I think if he was here, he would agree that it's Monica coded.
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying it because this was the very first horror movie that I ever saw in my life, and watching it now and really paying attention, I was like, did this form my entire like taste in horror in perpetuity forever? Signs point to yes. And I just said the name of the movie, it's Signs. And that wasn't intentional, but it worked out pretty good.
But here's the thing. You also said Signs 2, which, you know, the sequel, right?
Oh,
the
yeah.
The upcoming sequel that I'm directing.
Oh my God. No, you can't direct it. No one can touch this intellectual property.
Can't do anything, Monica. So
no, I won't let you. I will lay my body down to stop you from creating a sequel to Signs. No one needs it. But anyway, yeah, Signs came out in 2002. It's M. Night Shyamalan.
She was practicing beforehand.
I always get nervous about it. M. Night Shyamalan.
Nope.
Yeah.
Shyamalan. You got it. Great job.
I got it. I just get nervous every time because I fucked it up that whole other episode, and it's so embarrassing because it's one of my favorites.
It's anyway. The way I always hesitate before I say Neve Campbell's name now. I mean, I get it.
Yeah. Neve Campbell. Yeah. But anyway, Signs. This is only his third movie ever, so this was before his stinker years, and it's just before his stinker years. It is, some would say, his last non-stinker before the stinker period began, because many people think the stinker period began with The Village, which was his fourth film. I thought The Village was good. Unpopular opinion, but I also haven't watched it in a decade, so maybe that opinion would change.
Maybe we'll do that at some point.
I would love to do that. The official start is Lady in the Water.
Okay.
Yes, that's the official start.
Bryce Dallas
Paul
Howard
Giamatti is in that movie, and yeah, but this is in a strong non-stinker part of his career, and it was before his whole twist thing got old. Not that this is really that kind of a movie anyway, but it kind of is. But anyway, just before we get too far into it, I'll read you the little IMDb log line. A widowed former reverend living with his children and brother on a Pennsylvania farm finds mysterious crop circles in their fields, which suggests something more frightening to come. Amazing. Just like the film, that tagline slaps. It's great. It's fantastic. And I just want to start off this movie with the beginning of this movie because it's so good. I was like blown away watching this time around because I forgot how anxiety producing every moment of this film is. Like, there isn't a lot of, like, I don't know if payoff is the right word. There's not a lot of, like, gotcha moments in this. But in true Monica form, it's the slowest burn of all time. And do I love it? Yes. Spoiler alert. Yes.
But also, like, as an adult, there's not a lot of gotcha moments, but as a child, there are so many gotcha moments in this movie.
This fucking terrified me as a kid. I was like, this is the scariest thing that could ever happen. And I think it's also because, like, watching it as a kid, and then there's four main characters and two of them are kids, you know, it's like you're that kid in there, your little baby Abigail Breslin, your little baby Rory Culkin, Scream King.
Scream King.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't watch it until we watched it with our OG Spooky crew at some point during the pandemic for one of our movie nights. Like, I just never saw it before then. And it is really good, but I can imagine as a kid, like, the subtle way they do some of the scares, the way you're just like getting sneaks and peeks would be really effective. And I think you're totally right. Like, the child protagonist, I'm sure, is a really easy way to be like, this could happen to me.
Seriously. And I just love how it's like, it's not in their perspective, but you get like a really good take on like a child looking at an invasion through child's eyes. I don't know. It's really, really interesting. But the beginning of this movie, just like, again, like, who discovers that something is going on? It's the kids from moment one. And I just want to say that corn in and of itself is terrifying.
It's corn.
I know. And that
a
kid
big
loves it so much.
It's got the juice. It's got the juice. Couldn't imagine a more beautiful thing.
That was really beautiful. Corn. I haven't thought about it in so long.
That pops into my head at least once a week.
That's great. Gorgeous. That's wonderful. I love that. I wish corn made me feel that way, but like, corn stalks are so tall and they're so mighty and they wave menacingly in the wind. And then you put them all in these little lines when you're growing them as crops. Terrifying. The whole thing is scary from the get-go, but starting off this movie just with a little Abigail Breslin scream, like, emanating through the cornfield is so good.
Corn is so ominous. Like, it's so sinister.
It is. It's incredibly sinister. It's incredibly sinister. It's spooky. It's spooky. And I just think that the way that this whole thing happens, you learn so much about each of the characters just in this first, like, 2 seconds. Like, the way that Joaquin Phoenix's character, Meryl, like, flops out of bed when he hears the screen and falls on the ground. Like, he's a little bit of a mess and he's hilarious. Immediately, that is set up. We got Graham, previously Father Graham, who is very weird. He's just a weird guy. He's going through a lot.
He's
got a lot of feelings, and
he's tired. He's got more on his plate than he ever has before. He's questioning his purpose in life and the path that he's put himself on for presumably decades. It's a lot to unpack.
This movie is, you know, it's similar to, oh my god, I forgot the name of his biggest movie. What's it called?
Passion of the Christ.
No, not Mel Gibson. Wait, fuck Mel Gibson, even though he looks kind of hot in this movie and it makes me uncomfortable. Fuck him. No, M. Night.
Oh, Sixth Sense?
Sixth Sense, thank you. I was like, I see dead people. That's what it's called. No.
That is what it's called.
That is exactly what it's called.
No, but like, just how that movie is a horror movie, but it's actually like about like grief
feelings
and like childhood,
yeah,
blah blah blah. This movie is about an alien invasion, but it's also about like how family like reacts when like the matriarch
family systems
is taken from them, how and it's about faith, which sucks that my favorite movie is about faith because I'm not religious at all, but it is really well done.
Yeah, I think it's really well done. And I also think like faith can be separated from religion, and it can totally be like a meaningful message about faith and optimism and hope without it having to be like, God is so real.
That is why this movie is so still so good to me, because like it does exactly that. It separates faith from religion, because like I like am spiritual or whatever, but like I don't like the way religion, like I don't like anything about it. But same. Like they do a really good job of like having this movie that is so deeply about that not seem preachy at all.
That's the difference between this and some other like religious horror movies, yeah, is like he's Christian or was Christian, but the movie itself isn't necessarily like Christian. Like the Conjuring movies are so Catholic, and it really, yes, can't be divorced from how Catholic they are and the Bible, mm-hmm, and blah blah blah, and they're reading from the Bible, etc. And this one is like that's here, but it's his thing, and everyone else is like relationship to him. It's not the movie's thing. It's part of the plot because it's part of his growth. Yeah. Not like the salute. It's not like reading the Bible saves the day.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not, there's not an exorcism. Thank God. This isn't Passion of the Christ.
It's not like, oh my God, the Bible burns the aliens and that's how we're gonna, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's so funny that you say that, because I am a person who knows what this movie is about. You are a person who knows what this movie is about. Sydney also is one of those people. There's a contingent of people who have a very religious take on this movie.
Oh.
And it's fascinating.
Okay.
I hate it so much, but I get where they're coming from. I don't know if I should say it now, or I should say it later, but they think that that the aliens aren't aliens. They're actually demons. And they are drawn to him because of his crisis of faith. And
but so there's actually a lot of other people in other parts of the world where they're also drawn in the movie.
I know.
That's because we're all sinners, Chelsea.
Didn't come to my house.
All sinners in the eyes of the Lord.
No alien has come in here and squirted me in the face with poison gas.
That you know
there are like a lot of little things that I can see how people would believe that. That's it, if that's what they want to believe, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If you're making this into like a religious movie, then there's stuff for you. There's stuff, sure, for you to point at. There's a list.
And
I have
like
a list.
Spoilers for the Deus Ex Machina, if we're still gonna call it that, for how you beat aliens and all the alien movies, where there's always, yeah, something at the end where you go, oh my gosh, they have a weakness all along. It just took a little trial and error to figure out what it was. But you could do like a holy water connection, I guess.
Oh yeah, that's what it is. Because he is a reverend, the water itself is already holy because it's in his house.
All water that is in his abode. He was an atheist 5 minutes ago. I don't think it's holy.
I know. I mean, I can see. I know. That's what they're saying, though. And then they're also saying, like, three small cities in the Middle East were the ones that turned the tides.
Oh my God,
and
that's like, where Jesus is from.
Oh, wow, Jerusalem.
Wow.
The Holy Trinity. Three, you said three?
Oh my God.
The Holy Trinity.
And there was, but there were 14 lights over Mexico or whatever, right? So that's not divisible by three, actually. So they should reconsider their theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also,
if it was
a thing
12,
about,
like the number of apostles question mark, then we'd really be in business. But
like the 12 days of Christmas.
Like the 12 days of Christmas.
Exactly. That's it. That's the connection. There's also like something about how like people can't like determine what the aliens look like. And so they're like, oh, that's because demons present themselves to you in the way that scares you the most. And so that's why no one knows exactly what they look like. And I'm like, okay.
I don't know what you mean no one knows what they look like.
Because
you
want to
know what
them?
Scares me the most?
What?
Oh, like when they're on the rooftop and they're talking to the,
yeah,
Officer
because
Pulaski,
it's
they, or whatever her name is.
It's because they're like chameleons and they can change color. That's why you can't, no one can tell what they look like. But this theory posits that it's because they're demons. Sydney, what scares you the most?
$1 billion. So hopefully they would show up to my house.
Doesn't looking appear like to be as $1 billion. I'm so scared. As a sinner, that's not what I would want to come haunt me.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I'm glad we're getting this theory out of the way early. I don't buy into it. I understand the read on it. Sure. Like you want to, some people will want to go all the way with the religion thing because there's a lot of like religious iconography and shit.
Yeah.
There's support. There's for sure support. So I'm not going to yuck your yum. But if you're looking for a deep dive into that, we finished it. That was the part where we talked about it.
And now
we're
going to talk about it
as if they're aliens because this is alien month, not demon month. We could
do this alien month. I don't know if you guys are. What would you do for? Are there? Well, there are a lot of.
There's a lot of options for demon month.
Drag me to hell. Demon movies even are there, but I think that's probably a good chunk of them.
There's like hundreds. A lot. Hundreds of demon movies, but this isn't that month. It's alien month. But yeah, and last thing I'll say about the beginning of the movie, I couldn't get over how perfect the staging was for like the reveal of the crop circle.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's staging, but like when like Mel Gibson like gets down, Graham, I'm gonna call him Graham so I can divorce Mel Gibson from this. Graham gets down on his knees and is checking with Morgan is the son's name,
yeah, right? It's the Morgan. Boy's name, and Beau is the girl.
He's checking with Morgan. He's like, what's going on, is everyone okay? And he like has his hand on Morgan's chin.
The chin.
Mm-hmm. And then Morgan grabs his dad's chin and pushes his face and shows
look
him.
At this.
Yeah.
The
and
parallel
I feel like,
of it.
Yeah. I feel like that's part like a theme throughout this, that like his kids and his family are trying to like point him in the way to like see what he used to see or see what they want him to see, but he can't see it because he's in such a dark spot. So I don't know. Just another Easter egg from M. Night himself.
Wow. But yeah, I mean, the slow reveal that there is something, but they're not showing you what yet. And you're hearing like the growing cacophony of the dogs barking in the background.
Yes.
And then it's like one crunchy step forward and then you see that all of the corn is flattened. It's really good. It's really well done for the beginning. It really sets the tone.
It really does. It really does set the tone. Oh, man. And I just love the music in this movie so much. Like, what's the name? James Newton Howard did the score. And I love the score so much. Just that little, like, tinkling, like, theme song that's throughout. And then it gets a little Harry Potter at some point. So I was feeling a lot of grandiose Harry Potter-related things happening later on in the movie. But,
and
like,
what's his face is in the closet under the stairs, basically, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of under the stairs, I think.
Yes. I mean, I just meant the music, but yeah, you're right.
Oh my God.
You're right. You are right. There's more Harry Potter references abounding. But yeah, I love that theme. It's so, so haunting. And I think it's just because I've heard it my whole life, but it's like, I don't know.
IMDb trivia says he was very much like in conversation with a lot of classic film scores when he put this together, James Newton Howard. Like he very much was referencing Close Encounters of the Third Kind from 1977, Psycho from 1960.
Definitely feel the Psycho.
The Twilight Zone theme song as well. So it's he was working overtime, and he did a lot of the score apparently before the movie was even done, just because the storyboard from M. Night Shyamalan was like so extensive and so complete and so evocative on its own already that he could really start building it without even having the footage. So it's cool to see how well planned out this film was.
Oh yeah, he did his full M. Night thing
he
on this.
He put his whole M. Night tussie in it and
he really
had
did.
A good and just ran
he
with
did.
It.
That's so true.
He did. That's what happens when you write, direct, and produce the movie and you star in it low key. Not star.
And
but,
you're not in your flop era.
And you're not in your flop era. I love the thing with him, man. He will give himself like a crucial emotional role in his own films. It's not a cameo always. Like this, like his character, M. Night's character in this movie is like the guy, you know? He's like the heart, the emotional heart of this film. It's because of what's his name, Ray, played by M. Night Shyamalan. There we go.
Shyamalan.
I got it. I said it wrong the first
time.
And then you corrected yourself, and you did it. So beautiful.
Ray Reddy, that's his name. But he really did it. Here's something that you might not have known about this movie. I thought it was hilarious when I found out. Here's a little Easter egg. Did you notice that there's a house in this movie and it's gorgeous? Yes. They show it a trillion million times. Oh, Chelsea, you must have had your eyes closed.
I missed it.
I know. There's a lot of stuff with the house. The house is gorgeous. You see a lot of stuff like through the windows of the house. The house is sort of like a character, and apparently that was like intentional. M. Night was trying to, and I haven't seen this movie, so I don't know exactly what it means. So fill in the blanks if you'd like to. But he was saying that it was referential to Night of the Living Dead. Because in that, house, it's from the perspective of a house. That's what it says. It says,
what?
Yeah, it says one of the family. Yeah, it says signs came from two ideas. One was a family finds a crop circle in their backyard, and then kind of an end of the world movie a la Night of the Living Dead, where it's from the perspective of a house. So I don't know if it just means like a perspective of one family or if it's literally from a house, because I have not seen Night of the Living Dead. Well. So someone will say.
There was at least one shot of the house, though, that really made me think of Nope and their house there and the way it's like in some really important establishing shots of like what's going on and the danger that we're facing. And so I think maybe that movie was referencing this movie, at least in that capacity.
I could see that. And so it's a Victorian American house. The house, it's gorgeous. It has all these little ornate fixtures of it. And it's decorated in red, white, and blue, as you might have noticed. Americana, fuck yeah. It's from a small town in America, so you know.
Baseball. Maybe it's just that. Americana.
No, there's more. There's more. It's themes of the American Revolutionary War that he was going for.
The Patriot. Remember Mel Gibson plays like a Revolutionary War movie?
Oh my god, stop making this about Mel Gibson. He had no input in this. This is M. Night's vision, okay? No, but you're right. But yeah, apparently there were like little figurines throughout that are some sort of Revolutionary War thing with the house. I didn't see those, but they're there. And apparently the whole thing was supposed to be like an allegory to the Revolutionary War. And the humans are like the 18th century colonists, and the aliens are like the British Army. And they, you know, had us outnumbered, and they had superior shit or whatever, but we still were victorious in the end. Literally, that's true. I'm not kidding. I saw that in three different articles that was what this was supposed to be an allegory to. The alien invasion itself was the American Revolutionary War. Love it.
Okay.
I was not right, picking girl. That up, but sure. Pop
okay,
off.
Girl. Okay, yeah. Pop off, Queen M. Night. Do what you want. Oh, man. I was just trying to quote they/them. What does she say?
Step up your pussies.
Yeah, I don't know.
She step up your pussies, M. Night Shyamalan.
What?
That's not the quote that I was looking for. It's gone. It's not going to happen. But there was something there.
Oh, when he's like, bitch, or whatever, when they're talking about Pippin or whatever it is.
Sure. It's that. It's that. Bitch. Okay, M. Night, bitch, go off. But also, that like, we didn't need it, but we're glad that you thought all this through and you really put your whole M. Night tussy into it.
I'm glad that whatever vision you had, you executed, and it made a great movie. And I didn't appreciate that part, but I didn't need it to enjoy the film. So you know, sometimes you have to make choices when you are a creative, and sometimes you just go, I like the color blue, and then sometimes you go, it's going to be blue like the background of the stars on the American flag. So
it could be blue,
you know,
like the American Revolutionary War.
Like the original flag.
The aliens banner. Burn red, it's their red coats being revealed.
Yes. Yeah, I was like looking up like, oh, like little hidden Easter eggs, blah, 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 blah. Most of them I picked up on my own. But
Wow,
this
you're so
one,
brave.
I know. I'm just really observant. That's like something about me that you might not know.
I just like pay attention.
I just like really pay attention. No, I threw my phone under a couch so I wouldn't get distracted during this one. And I also put blankets on all my windows to create a blackout effect. And it was very effective. So I had a real cinematic experience earlier today. But another time that I had a deep personal and emotional response to the movie was when Officer Paskey came on the scene, because I am so obsessed with her. And also, I know you could read her as like Sweet Home Alabama. I'm going to say Sweet Home Alabama. Sweet Home Alabama, like country cop lady. I'm reading her as a powerful lesbian woman, tour de force cop, because there's a lot of backup here. She will not stop talking about all the hot, strong women in the Olympics. She's obsessed with them.
She loves to watch the Scandinavian women Olympians.
She's like, who have you noticed how tall the Scandinavian women are?
Have you seen them jump? Are you even paying attention?
They could jump onto the roof. No
they could jump clear over my head, and I would love them to. I would like them to do that. Where do I find the Olympians to jump right over my head?
Yeah. She's just amazing. Cherry Jones.
She's
just
like
an actress. She also
fun
just
fact.
Looks gay. Oh. Sorry. Continue.
my fun fact is she appears in this movie with Rory Culkin, and she's up for an Emmy for her guest appearance in Succession with Kieran Culkin.
Wow.
Do you think
a friend
Kieran
of the Culkin
Rory?
Family.
Yeah, and was like, Cherry's gonna be in my show now. Do you have any fun stories from Signs? That's how I imagine all of their conversations are. Very professional, very formal, but about their shared coworkers.
The name Cherry.
It's a great name.
Such a good name. It's putting it on the baby's name list. The Leatherface is made
Leatherface
made a comeback.
Cherry Height Drown.
Oh. Leatherface has made a huge comeback.
Leatherface Cherry Blythe Height Drown.
Yeah, on the poll. The poll is still open, and yeah, Blythe was ahead. And then they're tied, and now Leatherface, I think, is pulled ahead. So
I wish I could go vote five more times.
I hate you all. I hate all of the listeners. Fuck all of you. You're ruining my life. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
We're just trying to ensure a good life for your daughter, Monica.
Yeah.
Leatherface Cherry Blythe.
No, we're going to call this kid Leatherface no matter what you name.
I'm not having kids. There you go. It's decided.
It doesn't matter. We'll call you Little Leatherface.
Sometimes things happen anyway.
Yeah. Like Jurassic Park, life finds a way.
Life finds a way, Monica. Oh my God. Leatherface is going to happen one way
or another. I'm going to change the subject dramatically so we stop talking about this. Isn't it sad when Houdini the dog died?
Oh my God. Sad. Two dog deaths.
I know. Yeah, and they're both really traumatizing. The pacing is just so good in this. I love that, like, they're talking about how the animals have acted up, like, down in the cornfield, and, like, simultaneously it's happening there. And he's realizing it as it's going down. So sad to have to kill your own dog because it's going to eat your sister. That's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, though, my dog Bobby, when there's so much dog barking in this film, and she was like glued to the television,
she
barking at the dog, barking
in communication, like, talking back.
Yeah,
she had like, things to say.
She was very involved in this movie. Okay,
doggy after my own heart. She loves Signs. She's a Signs girly as well. Love that so much.
Was she upset or was she so brave as she watched?
So brave.
Oh my God, so I knew brave. She would be.
Well, okay, do you want to know another one of the little Easter egg things?
Yes.
It's kind of obvious, but it was on the Easter egg list, but I was like, I figured it out before. In the beginning, when Houdini pisses his pants, Houdini the dog, in case you think Houdini is in this movie. Houdini the dog.
Pisses his pants, the pants
when
he's
Harry
for
Houdini
sure wearing as a dog.
He pisses his dog pants in the kitchen, and Graham is... The father is like, oh, we'll call the doctor, he'll know what to do. And they're like, that he does, he's not a human, he's not a dog doctor. He's like, it's fine. The reason that he doesn't want to call the veterinarian in town is because the veterinarian in town is Ray Reddy, the man who killed his wife.
Yeah, that's a little Easter egg. It's a really interesting little way to start building out their history. They do a really good job with that. They have that moment when they're like out for pizza in town as well. And they've like started, you don't really know too much of what's going on, but they're really, that's where they started to like piece things together for you, because you have the conversation between Graham. I mean, he's already talked to the cop about this and been like, please stop calling me father. But he has that interaction with Merritt Weaver at the pharmacy where she's like, please, I just need to get confessions off my plate. I have to say all the swear words I've said in the last week.
Oh my God, that was so funny when she was like 37 and then she was like, is douchebag a curse word? And he was like, depend on the context. And he was like, yes. Actually, it's not 37. It's more like 71.
Yeah, she said it an additional 34 times that week. And she's keeping track. But you're starting to get that as you're getting more of the, please stop calling me father. But everyone is like, I need to unburden myself if we're having an alien invasion. And then, like, you have Joaquin Phoenix, Meryl at the RB sign-up place, whatever that's called, recruitment center, I don't know.
Yeah, the recruitment center.
And they're like talking around it a little bit there, I think, where of like what, maybe not why, but why he's there. And the cop says to him at one point, like, I think it's so nice that you like stuck around and then you move back home. And then the cop doesn't say that, or was that later?
The lady cop says that in, and they're sitting at the dinner table at the house.
Oh, okay. Well, that's another time center. Then.
But yeah, but yeah, another officer of authority, so I understand.
And you've got that whole guy there being like, he always swings. He's got the record for strikeouts, which is...
Is that Lionel, like Lionel in the Bad Boys, that he thinks is doing all the shit in the town? He's so much older than I anticipated. He's so much older than I anticipated. I was like expecting him to be like 17 little years boys. Old. Like that man is fully 35.
He's the way they talk about Lionel and the Bad Boys is so funny and interesting to me throughout
and
the movie.
And the Wolfington brothers.
And the Wolfington brothers. That's it. Oh my God. The Wolfington brothers.
Lionel Pritchard or something.
We moved past this and it's my fault because I started talking about the lady cop because I just wanted to talk about how she's gay. But like one of the best moments in this movie is when they first see the alien on the roof. And their reaction to one, just that shot is so good. It's just so quick and it's so terrifying. Yeah. So oh my God. The way that they like show the aliens in this movie is just fucking a masterclass. I love it. But the way, another great personality scene, the way that Meryl and Graham like decide to handle it, and Meryl's like, you're just gonna run around, you just gotta be crazy, you're gonna curse, and he's like, it doesn't sound natural when I curse. Like,
he's like, just make noises, and he's like, define noises.
Mel Gibson is but he's so funny in that scene. It's like, I'm insane with rage.
Yeah, he's really good. And he even says the word ass, I think. I think he's the one that says, like, you're gonna have an ass whooping or whatever. And then he's like, I cursed. Didn't you hear it?
And he's like, I heard.
So funny. Good job. Yeah.
Another thing that I didn't notice that's like a, well, I don't know if it's an Easter egg, but it's just like a little detail that goes into whenever the aliens are around. The crickets always stop right before they're going to show up. And I didn't notice that while I was watching, and I wish that I had, because that's such a great little ominous thing. I think there's an entire scene where that happens. I think that must be why, you know, later on in the movie when Meryl... it's like right before shit's about to go down, Meryl's outside getting bags of shit and he like looks into the cornfield and then he like gets super freaked out and runs back into the house. I'm like, maybe the cricket thing happened there, because I was like, what is he seeing that I don't see? I don't get it. But also, like I said, corn is just really scary. So he could just be like,
so sinister. You cannot tell me otherwise.
It's very sinister. I've seen children in the corn, so I know.
Haunted. But also, that's America's crop, etc. So once again, very Americana of them.
I'm really doubling down on the whole Americana thing.
America,
but
fuck yeah.
I just also really, a part of this that I really love is like the way that the media coverage of the invasion like affects them, and how they're trying to like keep it completely out of the house at first, which totally makes sense. The kids have gone through enough, but then once they turn it off on, they can't turn it off. And you like, I don't know, Joaquin Phoenix in particular, his eyes just get more and more glazed as the movie progresses, because he's had too much tube time.
He's so funny. And he starts and he's like, I didn't want the kids being obsessed. Meanwhile, he is like so obsessed, and he's like interacting with the TV, like when they're like, we're about to show you a clip and it's a birthday and it's in Brazil, and he's like, vamanos, vamanos, children, like, and well, it's that's not Portuguese, but it's fine.
He's doing his best. He doesn't know Portuguese.
It's so funny. All of his little quips, like there is like the most serious thing could be going on, and then he gives his response, and it's fucking stupid. It's so stupid. Like, there's that monologue that Mel Gibson gives, which is amazing. It's when they've stayed up all night and watching the TV.
They're talking
and
about the signs, and
they're talking about the signs.
If you're a miracle.
Yeah, and you know, he's asking his brother to, like, Meryl's asking
comfort
his brother
him.
To be, yeah, like he was before, which is so sad. Just be like, why can't you be like you were before? Because I'm sure
can't
he
you
was
just
like
pretend?
Very, you know how assuring reverends are. They have great answers for things. They're very self-assured. You have to be, I feel like, to take on that role and like be there to comfort people and listen to their sins. So
put yourself in a leadership position like that,
just shows how much has been taken from him. But anyway, he gives this incredible speech about the two types of people who see signs and see meaning in them, and people who are just like, it doesn't fucking matter, it's a 50-50 bet. And that's such a powerful movie moment, and they also like do a fucking flashback to it at the crux of the film too, which I always think is funny, but they really made sure you understood, and I appreciated that. But I just love that Meryl's like, you are so right, I'm a miracle man. One time at a party I was gonna make out with this chick, but then I had to spit my gum out and I moved my head away, and she could have barfed in my mouth, but she didn't. And that's on God.
Period.
Period.
It was
God
a
saved
miracle.
My life.
Yeah. Yeah. He like, has a lot of great lines. That moment included, and also his whole, this is all made up by guys who can't get girlfriends who are starting a club for other guys who can't get girlfriends.
The word
so
you're looking
good.
For is not nerd, Meryl. It's incel.
Right. He also has, this is not his line, but I wrote it down in my notes just now, and then I was like, I don't remember the context of this. I have to look it up. When he's talking with the recruiter about his baseball career, the recruiter says, like, oh, you have all of these records, don't you? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, why weren't you in the pros making stacks of cash and getting your toes licked by beautiful women? What a great question. Why isn't he getting his toes licked by beautiful women, you know?
I know.
I'm going to start asking people that. Like, when they say, oh, yeah, I did this. I'm like, why aren't you making so much money and getting your toes licked?
Why aren't you? Why aren't you getting your toes licked by beautiful women?
Be like, why are you here? Why aren't you out somewhere getting your toes licked? Like,
something came up earlier in the episode, and I was like, why am I thinking about toe licking right now? I was like, why did I think there was a toe licking reference in this movie? There's no way there is, because I couldn't remember. There it is. That's where it was.
Also, just while I'm looking at it in my notes too, when Morgan and Beau are in the bookshop and they're buying the book on aliens, but that whole soda commercial thing with the bookshop owner is so good too, where he's like, it's all just a conspiracy to sell sodas. I've seen 12 soda commercials.
Yeah. I think that's like a big strong point of this movie is that like it's very, very serious. It's very frightening. There's religious things going on. There's crises of faith. But they have so many banger comedy lines in there to break the tension. Like it's really well balanced. It really is. It keeps it from being too dreary. But yeah, okay. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but should we talk about like the alien scene a bit with a first reveal of the alien, because that was formative to me.
You're talking about the birthday scene.
Yeah, the birthday scene, the video. That scene was so important to me. At this point they had already established that there are like lights in the sky, there's aliens over Mexico City.
We've gotten the glimpse of the leg in the cornfields that Mel Gibson saw and then he ran inside.
That's so good.
We've
also
seen their outline on, you know,
the silhouette on the roof. Yes.
Also, I love that Morgan was like, yeah, they're probably short because they wouldn't need to grow any taller. But they're actually like 8 feet fucking tall and they're like fucking built to shit.
But he's so open to being wrong. And it's so interesting to do this movie after we just saw Mars Attacks, because there's also that moment where he's like, they're probably vegetarians because they've evolved to see that it's the more beneficial diet or whatever. I was like, that is so Pierce Brosnan in Mars Attacks coded. The way that he's open to being like, we don't really know. He's not so hardcore committed to his conclusions the way that Pierce Brosnan was. He's able to keep an open mind.
Okay, when we get to the final scene, I'm putting a pin in that idea about like what our what we think aliens to be versus what they actually are. Don't let me forget. But anyway, so they've done a great, like we said, this movie, all it does is build tension the entire time, and it does it so artfully. So you're like already at the edge of your seat because there's so much going on. You know, shit is hitting the fucking fan. We are surrounded by alien vessels of some sort. You see that bird smash into the ceiling. Poor thing. But the found footage aspect where they place it in this movie with this clip from the birthday party to reveal like the full look at the alien is so amazing. And I think he uses a lot of like found footage like vibes, not that sounds stupid, but I don't know how else to say it, like shots maybe in this movie. They're not actually found footage because this is a film, you know, and the camera is, you always know the camera is not like being held by someone, but sometimes he makes like found footage choices with his camera work where it'll be like affected by the characters that are in the movie itself. Like particularly there's one part where they're like blocking off the doors and the windows, and the camera gets covered up. The scene in the cupboard, there's some of that there. And then he actually has like actual found footage too. So it makes sense that
shot at the end.
Yeah, the POV shot. He does some of those classic found footage shots, but like within a film that isn't shot like that. So I thought that was interesting. And it makes sense to me that he ended up doing a movie like The Visit later on in his career because he was using some of those angles. Technique. Yeah. But like, I feel Meryl so hard when you're screaming at the camera being like, get the fuck out of the way, kids, because it's just like, I know what's coming. I've seen this movie, I can't even tell you how many times now, but like, it's just so stressful. You know, it's coming down the line and you're like, get the fuck out of the way. And then even if you know it's coming, it's still, oh, such a good scare, such a fucking good scare. And the alien isn't even walking across the scene like I thought he was. He's like just camouflaged in the bush and then he steps out. I always thought that he was just passing by, like passing by that little pathway or hallway, but he's actually in plain sight the whole time. You just can't see him because he's camouflaged so well. Yeah, that's what I noticed this time. He's standing there in the foliage, in the foliage, and then he just steps out, makes his little you can't see what I'm doing, but I'm doing a dramatic motion. He stunts on him. He's like, "Hello, little Threats baby bitches, forward. Happy birthday!" And I love that about him, stunt queen alien.
Foliage
haters.
Foliage. That's how I like to say foliage sometimes because I don't know where the I is in the word, so. Sometimes you just make it sound foliage French. Was right,
but I love foilage.
Foilage. That's how it's said.
That is how it's said.
Circles.
That's how in many it circles. Is said in this circle, right here, right
in
now.
In this circle right here, it's said as foilage. But yeah, when did you first saw this for the first time when you were a kid, right, Sydney? Did it fucking freak you out, this scene?
This was always such a really fun sleepover movie because like.
Yes.
It, but also like when I was trolling around Reddit, there's such like a generational divide in this movie.
Ooh.
Because I think like a lot of people didn't really like it when it came out. They kind of thought it was cheesy, you know what I mean?
With what?
The aliens and all that kind of stuff. And so we were, you know, 10, 11, 12 when we saw it, the people who were 20 in their 20s were like, what is this movie? And for us, we're like, this is the scariest movie ever.
Yeah.
And so there's this huge thing and people were just like, I can't believe this movie's getting so much love. Like, what is going on? Why do people think this movie is good? And I'm like, this movie clearly didn't raise you, okay?
Wow. Yeah. Well, it is. We'll get to it later when we're doing Knives Out of Fives, but it's pretty critically acclaimed. Not like hugely, but it has overall positive regard. But I thought everybody universally beloved Signs. I'm shocked to hear this.
There's a lot of people poking holes in it, which I didn't realize, and I understand the holes. Sure. We'll get to them, but like
and there are a lot of moments where it's like. Oh no, something is wrong. And we turn around and something has happened completely silently this whole time. Like, oh no, this child has moved directly in the line of danger and they haven't said a word. And all of a sudden their life is at risk. Like there's a lot of
that.
But well, it happens a couple of times, which is part of why.
Yeah, with the dog thing too that we were talking about earlier. So I get you.
This silence is actually, that is interesting though. Cause like, the thing with the dog, the Graham Hess, the dad, he's alerted because he's like, I can't hear my children anymore. And it's like you said with the crickets earlier, like the scary thing is when the crickets go silent. So actually I take back what I was just saying. The fact that so many of these moments like happen in silence and are revealed only when you turn around to look at them, I think was probably a very deliberate, purposeful choice.
Yeah, I thought those were all artfully done, but I can get someone being annoyed with that. I guess, you know, this is a slow burn horror movie, and so that really fucking pisses some people off. There's like so many people who hate 90% of what A24 puts out because a lot of them are like that, you know what I mean? So like, you know, I could be that contingent.
I don't like slow burns, but I like this because a lot of the slow burns are just like slow to be artsy, you know, but this
really
one
builds
like
tension.
And it does have, even though it's like, it's a slow payoff and reveal, it is quick paced.
Sorry. So like sound happened.
Yeah. It was a like, scary sound. Haunted.
Weird. It's like a quick paced movie, but also too, a lot of like alien movies are, you see what's happening out in the world, right?
Yes.
And this, it's like, how would just like a regular family
brings it home,
like, deal with it? And it's really fascinating for them being like, oh no, like it's just some static over the baby monitor. Oh, why are you sitting here all wearing tinfoil hats? Okay, but also
we don't want them to read our thoughts, queen.
Did y'all ever watch the Scary Movies?
Yes.
I'm
yes, They came for Signs fucking life in Scary Movie 3. One of them,
and it has Charlie Sheen in it as Mel Gibson. My favorite part of that is like they're all sitting there with their tinfoil hats, and somebody just like unwraps it, and it's a giant Hershey Kiss.
Yes. There's also that a part is in so that
ingrained in my brain that when I was watching this movie, I was like, they're wearing little Hershey kisses.
Thing.
Yeah, no, there was a moment where I was like, when does this part happen? And I was like, that's Scary Movie 3, Monica. Yep. That is Scary Movie, and it's not going to happen in this movie. But yeah, I mean, they got the set down so well, it was a little confusing. There's also a part in Scary Movie where the aliens come and they're with, I think it's Charlie Sheen, I can't remember, with one of the characters, and they take their finger and they stick it in his mouth, and they stick it all up in his mouth, and he's like, oh, okay. And then really like a little bit later, it's revealed that they piss out of that finger.
The finger.
So, you know, they had to go so stupid in Scary Movie 3 because Signs is just so smart and so brilliant, you know?
Actually, that's why it was.
Yeah,
Signs is so good that they could only parody it by being like, what if the finger was like a dick and it was in your mouth?
Yeah, they couldn't even come up with anything smarter than that. But I, back to what Sydney was saying about how it's a slow burn for sure, but there are like little blips throughout, like that it's not like Lamb where there's really not a lot going on until the end, but I still fucking love that movie. This one, you know, you have everything unfolding on the television, and the lights over the city and the bird and the scene with the birthday party we were just talking about. Like there's like little there's a blips minute and along a half. The way. Yeah.
There's only a minute and a half of aliens, but they're giving it to you spread throughout the film. It's not just a minute and a half at the end. Like, to me, the little glimpse of leg in the cornfields that Graham sees is one of the best scares in the movie. And then, like, when the thingies come out from under Ray's pantry door, that's one of the best scares in the movie.
That one's really, really good. That whole scene.
When he's like using the knife to reflect it and like check the use of reflection in this movie is really, really good.
Oh, what's another time when they do that?
The TV.
TV. Yeah. That was so good. I just can't get over the fact that M. Night gave himself this role. Like, this was like an emotionally charged role. Like, this, he has like a whole monologue. That's like really important to the movie. Like,
maybe it was meant to be, which very much ties into Graham's whole, maybe there is no such thing as a coincidence little point that he's making, where he's like, anything other than those 10, 15 seconds when I was passing her by, if I had fallen asleep in any of those other moments, it wouldn't have happened. It was almost like it was meant to be, which is
devastating.
I mean, it's one of those things where people are always like, God has a plan, and then sometimes things happen and you're like, okay, but why would that be part of the plan? Like, what is the takeaway here? And I think that was part of Graham's issue, is like, okay, if God has a plan and this was meant to be, though, like, what's the purpose? I can't see anything that might have come out of this, so I just don't know. I'm finding such a flaw with the God has a plan logic in this moment that it is disturbing my entire belief and foundation of my faith and my religion and my spirituality.
Totally. It makes total sense that this would rock him to his very core, you know? Like, also, he's done everything right, and then things still go horribly, horribly wrong.
What are you going to say? Are you going to say what I was trying to FaceTime you guys about last night and nobody would answer?
Absolutely not. You just kept saying God's plan and Graham, and all I could think about was Drake, because his last name is Graham.
Aubrey Graham. Degrassi, and the next generation star, Aubrey Graham.
Yeah, and you know, he has a song called God's Plan, and so that's God's Plan. I was like, did Drake take a movie watching supplement and then write God's Plan after watching Signs?
He watched Signs, he sat down immediately, and he wrote God's Plan. I don't know the lyrics of that song well enough, actually, to really, but I believe you. But what I was trying to FaceTime you about last night And then I texted Monica because she was the only one to respond, even though Sydney was awake, was that this movie actually continues our half-body trend. I don't know. We didn't get a full visual of the half-body, but we get dialogue confirming that she's a half-body.
The mom.
She's another half-body. What did they say? They said the truck has severed most of her lower half. She's a half body. She's half a top body. Half only.
She's a top, not a bottom.
She was technically severed, but she was being held together by the car.
The truck and the tree.
As
the truck is pulled out, then she's a half body. We don't see it, but we know that that's what happens. Poor thing. Yeah, that fucking reveal. Because they teased at it the whole movie.
Yeah. They do some really, really good cuts with it, too, because they have that moment where Graham and his brother are talking in the basement, and they have the moment of comfort. They have the, oh, my God, I believe in miracles because I didn't get puked on, so God is real. And they have that whole conversation, and Meryl asks him, what type are you? And he's like, well, do you feel comforted? And he's like, yeah, I do. And he's like, well, then what does it matter? But then he also immediately is like, there's no one watching out for us, Meryl. We are here all on our own. And then, like, the smash cut to him in the collar right after is good. Because we've heard him be called father throughout the film. But that's the first time we're really seeing it for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it would have been really easy to show it earlier on, just like hanging in his closet or something, you know what I mean? And be like, he's left it behind. But saving it for that moment when it goes right from there's nothing looking out for us in the universe, no one is watching out for us, cut to him in his full regalia is such a good, like, back-to-back shot.
Yeah.
And it's like really jarring.
Position. Yeah. It's like a slap in the fucking face. Oh, so many of those cuts are. Whenever they cut back to that moment where she's being severed, it's super bleak. That whole conversation with the cop, with the officer, where she's like, "This is the. Do you understand what's happening? This is going to be the last time that you speak to your wife." Like,
which is so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really powerful the way that is revealed in bits and pieces, and they're slowly feeding it to you, and then they're like backtracking a little to be like, I need you to fully appreciate like what's about to happen and the vibe and what's going through Graham's head in this moment. It's really well done.
Yeah, it's just this whole movie is like, and maybe it's because I've seen it so many times, but like the whole movie is like an elaborate game of chess. Like every single piece, every single part of the scene, obviously that's how a movie works. Each scene moves you closer to the end. But like, they're all just like these little puzzle pieces. There's no throwaway scene. They all like harken back to something. They all are like laying the groundwork for a little bit of something that's going to pay off later. Like, he really thought through to the fucking nth degree. Damn, M. Night.
Yeah. No, but it's so interesting. It is a really well-written movie in that regard, but just the choice of the placements are so interesting too, because like by the time you finally get that conversation with the wife, and not just the build up to the conversation with the wife, it's the third time we're visiting that scene, but it doesn't come until after he has like started speaking to God again, basically, because they have the whole moment where Rory Culkin is having his asthma attack downstairs in the basement, and they don't have his medication, his inhaler is upstairs, they don't have an EpiPen or anything, so he's just like holding him to his chest and working through it. But then he says, don't do this to me again, not again, I hate you, I hate you, and he's like talking to God. And so you see it in some ways like sort of starting to, he's grasping onto it in this like desperate moment, or it's coming back to him in a moment of need as things are tough, but kind of working out. And only then do you see like the moment that he loses it is only when he like starts to get it back again.
Totally. Oh man. I also thought it was interesting how like when he's telling Meryl about what she said in her final moments, He like says, like, he paraphrases it obviously, but like he just, he is so determined to not see anything in it, you know. Mm-hmm. He's not even being like, she said like specifically for you to do this. She was giving instructions to each of them. She's just being like, oh, it was just this stupid thing. Her brain was misfiring because she was dying. Like, blah, 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 blah.
He's such,
like,
a hater in that moment.
Yeah.
Such a hater. And then you finally see that scene.
See it for yourself.
She's giving you, like, instructions. She had something specific to say for every single member of the family. You know? I'm like, he should know about that. That's sweet. You know, that she was thought of him, her brother-in-law, not even like her brother in those final moments.
His wife was a witch.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing. Okay. So we're talking about this scene now. Oh, there's a lot of discussion about like, oh, like God's plan, blah, blah, blah. She has this vision as she's dying, so she knows what to say. She knows, like, what is going to happen in the future. And
Bo.
But, yeah, no, that's the whole thing. People are like, oh, like, it was just a one-off thing. Like, that doesn't necessarily mean that she can see the future. But she definitely fucking can see the future because she gave that gift to her daughter, Bo, because Bo also has a dream where she sees Morgan dying of an asthma attack. And there's that creepy scene where she's like, oh, I don't want you to die.
Yeah. She's so cute.
And then he's dying. And
she's
so little.
She's so good.
She's a little pumpkin. She's a little baby pumpkin. And yeah. And like once he's actually dying, she's like, I saw this like in my dream, you know? So I think there's definitely some clairvoyance in the family.
Although I will say, as a little sister who one time had an ominous feeling that something bad had happened to her big brother, and then I called my mommy and I was right and something had happened, like sometimes
maybe
you just, there's just a familial connection, like that's my guy, you know. So sometimes you gotta just trust yourself.
Our lawyer of the pod, Alex, we are psychically linked, like she'll be like, yeah, I was having a bad dream at this exact time. And I was like, weird. I woke up for no reason at that exact time, but in my time zone. That's all the time. We do it.
Weird.
We do it constantly. Or like she'll be in pain and I'll be like nauseous for some reason. And I'll be like, I'll be nauseous for no reason.
Girl,
and I'll be like,
not
oh,
feeling good?
Alex,
yeah,
Alex, how are you okay? Every time. Every single time.
Damn. That's wild. I
Sometimes
love that.
Sometimes you're just so connected that your vibrational frequencies align. Mm-hmm. Just like how vibrational frequencies with yodeling was important in a previous film.
Exactly. The vibe.
I also thought about Nope because it's okay. Nope is a big brother, little sister alien movie, and this is a big brother, little sister alien movie.
Mm-hmm. Jordan Peele saw that. As he should, because it's a great film. But yeah, that brings us to like the kind of final showdown. Oh, well, real quick before that, I love that M. Night also was like, I'm going to plant the water idea. That's going to be the thing that I say,
yeah,
that my character is going to say. That founded based off of literally no evidence at all.
Well,
he has no evidence. He's like, it doesn't seem to be near water. So I'm going to
late. I can see how someone would make that leap. It's a really good leap to make and also be correct, but you have to imagine that there's
a leap, though.
Yeah. You know,
there's a leap taking.
For sure.
A leap of faith, some would say.
They're all in crops, so that means they're far away from the ocean. But
there are crops next to the ocean, like a lot of the time.
Well, there weren't crop circles there, Monica, just only in the Midwestern, which is crazy, actually, because Pennsylvania is not that Midwestern, but also Pennsylvania is very big, so I'm not sure where Bucks County is.
It's like 40 miles outside of Philadelphia. They say it in the opening credits.
Oh, that's true. They do say that. So it's not terribly far away from the coast.
But it's not right there, you know.
But it's not right. It's
not
right
on
the lake. Yeah.
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 I mean, question.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was thinking about this.
Okay.
If, fun facts. The aliens don't like water. You know. Can they go to areas with high humidity with all the water in the air? Like,
I've always thought of Brazil as a humid place, but I guess I don't know if that's accurate.
Like, could they come and hang in Alabama where it's like 65% humidity?
That's the thing. This is one of the things that people poke a lot of holes in with this movie. And this is where I'll take the pin out of that idea from earlier. There's like always this idea that is in like all, not every alien movie, but in a ton of them, that like if there's an alien race that can come to our planet, they must be so much more advanced than us. That
they've mastered space travel first. Yeah.
It takes a lot of technology to master space travel. Let's give them their dues. Good job. Pat on the back. We're moving on. Like, just because they're really good at science doesn't mean there's some like godly race that's like beyond violence, beyond this, beyond that. Like, there's a assumption that Pierce Brosnan made in Mars Attacks as well, where they're like, oh, they must be this like post-war society where everything is peaceful and blah 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 blah. Obviously not. Like, if they're coming to Earth, they're probably coming to,
they're hostile
shit. But the other thing is, like, there's a bunch of reasons why they could be coming to Earth, one of which could be that their planet is dying and they need a new place to live. People assume that all the time. Well, they must have fucked some shit up for their old planet to not work anymore. Did anybody think about that? Because everyone's like, oh, these aliens, they're supposed to be so smart. Why would they come to a planet that's 70% water or whatever the fuck percentage it is water? It's a lot of fucking water. That's fucking dumb. And it's like, maybe they didn't know. Maybe they don't have water where they're from. And they didn't know that water was going to kill them. You know, that would be.
Or they don't have it in its liquid form. And when it's in a, like, a gaseous form, it's totally fine. So humidity, a-okay. Like.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's such an interesting point, because like we have talked about like the deus ex machina of the alien movie trope, but also it makes sense that a lot of these movies are happening in a tight timeline. Obviously the movie's only gonna end once they've started to figure out how to push back. And they're not gonna do that in the first 5 minutes of the movie for the most part, because then what's the rest of the movie going to be? Especially if this is like 2 days of alien invasion. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is not a long drawn out alien invasion film. But it makes complete sense that coming from a completely different planet, they don't know what they're vulnerable to yet on our planet. And also things they might be vulnerable to in one capacity and not another. And this is maybe very silly, but it makes me think about how people are like, I'm allergic to eggs, but not when they're cooked, only when they're like, I can't eat scrambled eggs, but I can eat cookies or whatever with baking. Like, some things are situational. Yeah,
totally, totally. Like, they just didn't know that in that form it would be that way. Or, you know, there's another aspect of it too, which is kind of like a weak argument on this point because it's just a speculation. But when they're in the basement and like finally the radio has come back online, there's the radio broadcast and they're saying like, oh, we've basically won. They've left their wounded here, but we think that they were only here to like harvest humans anyway. So like people being like, why would they try to come live on a planet where they're going to burn from water? One, we already said the part where they might not have known that was going to happen, but two, that might not have been their whole point of coming. Maybe they're coming to
snatch
us. I don't fucking know. They obviously not vegetarians.
Okay, they want to eat us, or they need people to be taken back to their planet for whatever reason, or etc.
They just think they're cute and we're cute and they
these
want
are
us
our
pets,
little pets. Yeah. This one's bad. I'm gonna poison it with gas from my wrist spike, but this one is my little friend, and I'm gonna name it. What did the little brother want to name the dog in the blob? Daniel
William.
Or William.
Perfect.
Also, oh, I was going to say something. What was it?
Talking about the radio broadcast, harvesting humans.
The radio. The radio is going to be our only form of like fun communication at the end of the world, because there will be no Wi-Fi. So everybody buy an emergency radio.
Yes. Everybody buy an emergency radio and learn how to use it.
Yep.
My brother's old neighborhood, they had somebody who was like the designated emergency radio person. Yeah. And if you guys watched Class of 07 on Prime, which was that, what's her little face, cutie little sucker punch, love her, series of unfortunate events.
Oh, Emily. Original. Emily.
Browning. Emily Browning. Yeah. She is so great in that, and it's really fun. And her whole like contribution to the group was that back in high school she did the radio announcements, so she knows how to run the radio. And so they're trying to contact everybody at the end of the world. That's a fun show if you haven't watched it, by the way.
Everybody get a radio in your house if you don't have one. Alexa does not count because you need Wi-Fi. You need like a real radio that runs off batteries. Yeah.
I gotta get one. I have one, but it doesn't work. It is for sure.
You need like a crank one.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we need a battery powered one. Yeah, that'd be smart. But yeah, so I don't know. I get the whole Zether poking in the movie. I get it. You want it to be watertight, but obviously it can't be because they're allergic to water and they'll die.
Hey!
Got him. But yeah, I don't know. For me, it wasn't so glaring of an issue because I don't think that aliens are going to be this perfect fucking race. You know, they've been, in my opinion, me and
the are we perfect? No, but we're going to Mars, you know.
They've been coming
I'm not going to Mars.
Planet Earth for a long time, and they've been fucking it up and dying all the time, and they haven't taken us over yet, so they're obviously not perfect. They're just like us.
Have you considered, Morgan says they might be here doing like an exploratory visit or a first attack or whatever, and then they're going to go home, and then they're going to come back, but it's going to be like 100,000 years or whatever. Have you even considered that maybe last time they were here, this could be the second visit? Maybe last time they were here was the Ice Age, and they didn't see.
And they were like,
all the
liquid
water. They thought it was solid. Have you even thought about that?
Mm-hmm.
They did not factor in climate change. Okay.
They didn't factor it in.
Wow. See? Yeah.
They didn't see the blob the way we did.
I know.
And it's because they don't live on this planet. I mean, you know?
They can't know everything. You know what I mean? They're just like us. They're not people. They're just say they're people just like us. They're not people, but they're beings just like us.
They're such beautiful idiots. They're so gorgeous. The way that they can camouflage into Morgan's plaid shirt and reflect Graham's face back at him, and you can see little baby Abigail Breslin on the arm at one point.
That part was funny. Yeah, that the end of this freaky movie. Yeah. That this movie so fucking amazing. They also did a really good job of having the alien be in low light so you can't really see what its face looks like, and that's for the best, because
except when you get that like dumb close up, which and then you see it and you're like, this isn't great CGI.
Well, the close up was of the reflection, wasn't it? So it was kind of like,
no, it's still like in its face.
You can't totally see. You can't totally see. So I can pretend that it looks really good.
They did their best, though, because they had a lot of more CGI planned for this movie. Like, they were really going to lean into the invisible camouflage thing at first. And then they decided to use that trope less heavily because it just wasn't working well with what they were doing with the technology or the way that it blended into the film. So they cut it out and they used a lot of like people in suits and stuff like that. Which is also part of why you get the different appearances of the aliens, because for the birthday party video, for example, which M. Night Shyamalan filmed himself on a camcorder, apparently they had tall, thin actresses that they were using there, and then they decided that it wasn't like threatening enough to be like the tall, thin. They wanted somebody that had more heft, so then they went with male models after that. Not male models necessarily,
but only male models. That's why if you felt weirdly attracted to that alien at the end, you're like, damn, he's so built. It's because he was a male model.
But yeah, he did. Really, M. Night Shyamalan really wanted to keep it as practical as he could too, because there had been discussion, I guess, about doing like CGI crop circles, and he was like, no, we gotta actually grow all this yes. corn, and then we gotta actually squish it down.
That's so
could you
awesome.
Imagine
they so discover cool. they have a I new technology on this movie
think about that.
They discovered some new way of watering the crops to make the corn grow faster. And then the college that had let them use corn for whatever and whatever other way was like, actually, could you teach us how to do that?
Actually?
Could you guys wow, pass that knowledge along?
Wow, they innovated farming in this film. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. influence of science, I'm telling you. Not only did it warp my entire desires in the horror, like, genre, it also changed farming forever. Amazing.
But the whole water thing also, when it comes to like discussing the plot holes, apparently that was in part a reference to another alien movie from 1963 called The Day of the Triffids or something like that. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but Alien Nation from 1988, they also had a similar plot line. So like you can look at it for plot holes if you really want to, but also you can just say this is yeah. part of like a larger alien lore and like the legacy of storytelling, etc. Yeah
no, I think there he didn't come up with aliens being allergic to water. That's been a thing, so come on.
Yeah, we've been new about that.
But anyway, the very final like bit of this movie is just so well done. Like it all comes together. We get to see Joaquin Phoenix beat the ever loving shit out of
Swing away, Meryl.
Swing away. And that first second when the water falls on his shoulder and he sizzles.
Oh, it's over so for good. Him.
So good. Such a good revelation. And then like he's like Graham sees that and he believes it all, like, you know, he has to, because now his son's life is on the line, because Morgan got gassed by the special wrist gas thing.
Look at the flick of the wrist.
And you know, he's like, that's why he had asthma.
That's why
he always had asthma, because it was going to save his life. Now his lungs were closed. Like everything, he goes from nothing has meaning to literally everything has meaning. Like this wasn't even in the prophecy from his dying wife. Like this is just like from birth, this was always predestined.
They also don't
that kind of shit pisses me off, but I love this movie, so I'll let it slide.
Yeah, they don't make this part explicit because they don't say if Bo's whole water contamination behavior or whatever predated her mom's death, but it felt very much like a trauma response, like regression to me, that she's suddenly finding these issues with it. It's always wrong, it's always bad, so she's always abandoning it and getting a new glass. They didn't make a specific link between those, but as I was watching it, it felt like a grieving child behavior.
Totally.
Where you're just like scared and you don't know what's wrong and this is wrong and you don't know what happened, and like both of you kind of maybe, I mean Morgan for sure blames the dad a little bit in some ways for his mom's death, because he's like, you didn't save her, and they talk about that at the dinner party yeah. scene. But I think you could possibly make the link between the mom's death, Bo having this behavior where she leaves all of these water glasses around. The water glasses being around was also what saved them in the end with the alien invasion. Yeah. And so maybe there was some larger plan, and it's horrible, but it contributed to this moment.
She had to die for them to survive the alien invasion. Like that's
she had to die for him to get the phone call from Ray, to go to Ray's house and see the alien in the pantry and cut off its little fingies.
It all had to go that way, that
they needed to prepare and hunker down and like board up the house. You know what I mean? It is all feeding together in a way that contributes to the elements being in place that needed to be in place for this family to survive.
Yeah. I have trouble with the whole like it's like predestination versus free will thing. So like, do you have free will if everything was already predetermined? And we don't need to get into that right now because it's a big conversation.
That's a much larger discussion.
But yeah, we're not. Oh, I know. I'm just saying.
Let's get into the really bare bones of theology right now.
I'm not going to. I'm just saying, though. It just, that shit usually pisses me off. It's, that's what this is arguing. It's just like, it was always going to happen this way, no matter what. That always makes me angry because I love the concept of free will. Who knows if it's real? But in this movie, it works so well. I can't be angered. I can't be angry at M. Night. He really,
I think there
really
can be free will can exist within the everything happens for a reason, and it's like the choices that we make lead to things going the way that they do, but the ball has been rolling and been in motion the whole time. I think those can be concepts that work together.
Cool. That's good. I don't know. We don't want to go into the whole conversation.
Sure.
Yeah, so I don't know. The end of this movie was nice, though, even though he returned to the cloth or whatever.
Someone's gotta. Look, everybody in town clearly needed him, so.
Yeah.
Merritt Weaver has to tell what curse words she said.
Yeah, and I also liked to, like, at the beginning of the movie, that one of the first things you see is the stain on the wall from where the cross used to be. And it would be, like, an obvious choice, like there's dirt around it. That's what I mean, not a stain. Not like it was creating some sort of ooze.
It was.
But it was like sun bleached into the wall.
It was like
or
sun
whatever.
Bleached into the wallpaper. And so like an obvious choice would have been like, oh, putting the cross back on the wall. But I like that it wasn't that. Like it shows him getting into his little outfit and with this little thing.
And it was like a bunch of family photos.
Yeah. Yeah. The wall's covered in his family photos and like of him and his wife from before, from his kids. Now and you know things that have happened since his wife died. So I thought that was really nice that like he didn't just go back to the way he was before, because it's not gonna be the way that it was before. It's gonna be something different, but he does have his faith back now. So I thought that was nice.
I agree.
That brings us to our segments, I think. Do you have any other thoughts before we move on?
No, I don't think so.
I can't believe two dogs die in this movie.
Yeah.
Two dogs.
Sad.
It's bad.
But you know what is fun is when Joaquin Phoenix is stacking up the dog food in front of the kolsch, and then he just puts the can of tomato soup or whatever right on top to really complete the pile. So this will make this a well-defended fortress.
He's so funny in this. Okay, well, then it's time for how could this movie be gayer?
I think that Merritt Weaver, her character is gay. We talked about the cop Cherry Jones. Yes, Tracy. I think that, and I can't remember why I thought this to myself, but I thought Bo is gonna grow up and be gay.
That's the water thing. I can't explain it, but it makes perfect sense.
Something about that, gay.
Something about that, yeah.
Lionel has the hots for Meryl.
Do you think?
Like, oh, yeah.
Ooh.
I also thought to myself, Meryl is great. Really love Joaquin Phoenix in this role. He does a wonderful job. And the baseball element is central, but she could have been like a butch farm aunt also.
She could have played softball.
She could have played softball.
Yeah.
Or it could have been.
Or Meryl's
she
already
been, like,
gay.
A
you don't know.
Soccer player.
Her name still could have been Meryl.
Kick the ball or whatever. Yeah. I mean, they could have kept the name and made her a lesbian.
Yeah.
Who's to say he's not gay himself already?
He might be.
With Lionel.
I feel like baseball is one of the gayest sports you can play as a man.
Those little pants,
they've all got nice butts. They're like,
it's gay to have a nice butt.
Hanging out in the dugout, you know?
I'm going to say something so brave yet
so
controversial.
To join the army?
Controversial.
That's gay.
All sports are gay. Because, like, you're.
Have you guys been watching the Women's World Cup? I mean, come on.
But just like.
Yeah.
You're all up in each other's business. You're patting each other's butts. There's a lot of grunting. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I feel that innately. But yeah, I mean, we have a canonically queer woman in this movie, and you can't tell me that there's not.
I'm willing to fully support that narrative. Yeah.
There is. Cherry Jones is playing a gay woman. Okay. Any other gay thoughts to share?
I think the mom absolutely had a queer phase in college, and then I think it scared her too much, and then she's like, actually, I'm going to marry a priest.
I'm going to marry a fucking reverend, and then I'm for sure going to go to heaven, and I don't even have to worry about this anymore.
Nope.
I can see that. I can see that. Okay, well, that brings us to, where would Matthew Lillard fit into this film?
He would be fun as Meryl. I would like to see him in a serious role like that, where he has like funny little one-liners, but he's not being like goofy per se. He's being protective. He's kind of an action hero in some ways. I think that would be an interesting spot for him to take.
Totally.
He could have been Ray. It's
a natural spot.
He could have been Ray.
You can't pry that out of M. Night's cold, dead hands, Sydney.
M. Night should have been Lionel.
That would be a little a point that made a little bit more sense, though. He's a little
for the army recruiter.
Yeah, the army recruiter was so good, though. Only the army recruiter could say that shit about licking toes.
Matthew Lillard could be the army recruiter and talk about beautiful women licking toes. I could see that being a line that he would love to say.
No, you know who Matthew Lillard would be? He would be the bookshop owner, being like, "They're trying to sell us soda."
What if Matthew Lillard was in the soda commercial that they showed in that moment? He was like, "Hi, I'm Matthew Lillard. Buy Shasta Cola or whatever."
He plays himself in a cola.
Yes,
commercial.
Yes, a little celebrity cameo for a celebrity endorsement for soda, and it's part of the growing soda conspiracy.
It's perfect. It's perfect. Honestly. Okay, that brings us to the dumb bitch. Who is the dumb bitch? It's a hard one. It could be the aliens because they came to the water planet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to hear that nomination out. Despite everything we've said so far, it is not a bad nomination.
Because here's
the thing,
they
just dumb bitch behavior of them.
They didn't fully do their research. That's on them.
They are a little smart in their whole distraction with knocking at the door of the basement while one of them is sneaking around, finding the coal chute, reaching a creepy little hand through. But also, they couldn't figure out how to open the pantry door, so.
They're not good with doors.
They probably don't have handles on their planet.
With doors. Yeah. They got bad grip. They got bad grip.
They've got just only swinging doors on their planet.
They open automatically.
Yeah, they've never had to deal with this before. That was another one of the plot holes. I don't know how to explain that one. They're not perfect. Okay. Sometimes I can't open
the
jar.
We didn't see them grip anything. We only saw one hand supporting Morgan and the other one reaching towards him. So we don't even know that they can really make a fist in that way. Maybe their fingers don't bend in such a capacity. Other than the claw hand. But that's not fully closed. Maybe that's as closed as it gets.
Yeah, also, like, a lot of the times that they couldn't get through doors is because the doors are also barricaded. So it's, like, not just that they can't turn the doorknob. It's more than that.
It's more than
that. They're smart enough also for the one at the end to be, like, seeking revenge, after Graham cut off its fingies.
Yeah, how did it know where it lived?
It's the same one. It followed him home.
It's probably all part of the same like scouting party because they're all in that same little area.
Ray's house probably very nearby.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the aliens for me. Nobody else fucks it hard enough, you know?
Or they killed a good amount of people, but they also got defeated pretty fast.
Yeah.
I'm willing to back that. I mean, if you've mastered space travel and you've got poison gas and you're not using it on this house hardly at all until that one pivotal moment, I mean, you could argue maybe that they used it a little bit before. I mean, I kind of got the impression the first time I watched it, that that was what caused Morgan's asthma attack. But then it's like, that is not what happened, because then they circle back and they do it at the end. And so you're like, okay, so it was just a normal asthma attack, I guess. He just was scared and panicking, maybe. He got scared. But yeah, I mean, they for having interdimensional travel or space travel technology at their disposal, they sure don't really seem to have a strong plan in place for what they're trying to do when they get here and how they're going to go about it. And they get their butts whipped pretty quick.
They're the dumb bitch. There's no two ways about it. In this movie, they're the dumb bitch. I love dumb bitches all the time. Doesn't mean they don't have reasons for it, but they're the dumb bitch.
Sure.
For sure.
Yeah. Valid.
All right. That brings us to our knives out of five. So what is the critical reception?
Well, like I said, overall positive. So on IMDb, this movie has a 6.8 out of 10. So good, but not glowing. That's true. Mm-hmm. And then on Rotten Tomatoes, it has 75% fresh from critics and 67% fresh from audiences. But the real highlight is that in 2003, this movie was nominated for Choice Horror Movie Thriller at the Teen Choice Awards.
Oh, that's the most important.
Wow.
It didn't win. Once again, it didn't win, but it was nominated. So that is an honor.
What does this have for teens? It just has Tracy. I guess Joaquin Phoenix is hot in it.
He is very hot in it. In yeah.
Yeah.
So there's and that. Teens like aliens.
Yeah.
And they love to leave glasses of water in their room.
True.
And in their cars.
I still do that now. Yeah.
I recently pulled like 12 water bottles from under the seats in my car.
Oh, it happens. Sometimes it happens. They love to say the word douchebag 34 times in a week while gossiping about how Nate kissed Barbara or whatever it is that Tracy says.
That's so important.
It's very relatable.
That scene was for teens, although she's a fully
she could be 19.
What's the word when you talk to the But she's pharmacist. Doling out medication. Yeah, so you have to imagine, is she a pharmacist?
I don't think she's a pharmacist. I think she just works the front desk.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows? I have no
Who's
idea.
Who's to say?
Regardless, gossip is for teens. So
yeah. Gossip is for teens. And this is a teen
movie. Loved it.
And as a teen myself, I'm going to give this movie 5 knives out of 5. This is one of my all-time favorite movies ever. I really appreciated it a lot more this time around, too. Like, I think when I watched it in 2020, I, like, really overhyped it to our OG spooky crew. And so when I watched it, I was like, oh, this isn't scary at all. Why don't I remember it being so great? But that's because it's just not that kind of a movie. It's so amazing. Like, just taking the time to really pay attention to all the details. It's really moving. The grief aspect of it, the family coming back together, just all of those little those points, like the Last Supper scene where they all eat their own favorite type of food and Mel Gibson goes apeshit and then they all forgive him and cry together. Like, so sweet. It's just a really moving movie, and I think it's really beautifully done, and you can tell me all these plot holes and I won't believe them, and you can tell me that whole demon philosophy and I'll say thank you.
Whatever.
Talk to someone else about that. I don't want to hear it. But yeah, for me, it's a perfect 5 out of 5. I will watch this 100 more times in my life and be very happy.
Yeah, I think for me, I love it a lot. I think it's a really well put together film. Really, I love the growth of the characters and like the journey that they're going through and how that is so central to the film while also being a fun alien invasion movie where they do a lot of cool stuff with that. Like, really, again, I know I said it probably 5 times, but the leg in the cornfield, I think, is such a good, scary, blink and you miss it moment. The fingers under the pantry door after he spent so long, like, trying to see something through the reflection of the knife, and you almost think it's not going to happen. Like, there are so many good little moments where the silhouette on the roof, like, I love that. Yes. But I will knock a couple decimal points because there were two moments of slow-mo that I felt like were so strange and like weird and like stilted and awkward, and it felt like they wanted that moment to be longer. And look, I've done this in my TikTok editing sometimes for spooky TikToks where the footage that I have just doesn't fully reach the length of time I want it to go. So I'll slow it down. But it just was a little grating to me watching it. Like, it took me out to be like, why are we doing slow-mo for 2 seconds and then going back to full? Like, I wish you had just shot the clip for another 2 seconds longer, because the slow-mo didn't really add anything and it only took away. So I'm going to give it like a 4.8 knives out of fives, because that bothered me.
Fair.
I love this movie. I'm giving it a 4.5 out of five. It's so good. But I will say that the close-up of the alien at the end really took me out.
The glimpses are great. The full shot. Yeah. That's always tricky with like pretty movies.
With like a lot
the creature feature.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, at the time you're doing cutting edge shit. So you don't know that it's not going to hold up in 20 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ugh.
But yeah, I mean, other than the alien close-up, they had so many good, fun close-ups. Like, I loved how close-up we got on Graham's face so often. And how frequently they were almost looking, like, right into the camera, sort of like that found footage style that you were talking about earlier, Monica. Mm-hmm. I thought the filmography was great. And that one shot, so the overhead shot as they're driving into town. And so it's like, you're not seeing any crop circles or anything like that, but you're, like, looking because of the beginning.
Yeah, it's also, it was like, this is the alien's perspective.
But then they had to go and be like, here's full alien and here's slow-mo. And it's just like, well, you get docked a few points.
Two things we could have lost. But yeah, on the whole, such a great movie. I'm so glad we finally covered it. Amazing. But there's more.
There's more. Alien
Month. And it's the piece de resistance, Chelsea.
The piece de resistance. The whole reason Alien Month came to be, the little present that I have to give Sydney, the reason I had Emily Browning on my mind perhaps earlier. We have a Fifth Tuesday next week. And we are doing Fifth Tuesday, but we are doing Alien Month Fifth Tuesday. So the film that we have up on our docket, it's actually, I think, really interesting within our alien lineup, because it also finally gets around to the question that we posed in our first episode, Aliens, but none of the other films have been daring enough to really ask, other than a little bit Mars Attacks. Would you fuck an alien? Well, you can in this movie, because it is Stephanie Meyer's The Host, and it's really more romance than it is spooky. But it is an alien invasion film.
It's a Fifth
Tuesday.
We can
Tuesday
do whatever
it's
we
got
want.
A lot of, yeah, it's got, it's, I can't wait to discuss it with Sydney. Monica and I both revisited the full book, so we're prepared to also make
read it
book club. Yeah.
Let me tell you.
I tried, and I was like, I can't do this.
It's fine.
She's
going to
love the movie, though,
every
maybe.
Part of it to you, so it's going to be actually better.
It's kind of
also,
bad, but...
Just saying, the book, the audiobook is 23 hours
long.
So we did the Lord's work to bring you a comprehensive episode on The Host, okay? 23 hours. I can't get those hours back. Let me tell you that I loved every minute of those.
Yeah, it was
hours.
Great. I was enthralled, but 3.5 of the first 3.5 hours is all just world building and setup. But it's necessary. It's needed. They're going to gloss right over most of that in the film. The film, Sydney, let me prepare you. Like a good movie per se, but enjoyable, I think. So I don't want you to have expectations too high, but think of it like a Twilight movie, because it's basically is.
It's not as good as the Twilight movies. Let's be clear. So let me take you below the Twilight movie.
Eclipse, maybe. Like, think of like Eclipse, sort of, but with worse fashion.
It's like Breaking Dawn, because that's my least favorite. How about that? Breaking Dawn Part 2. No, whichever one doesn't have.
No, Breaking Dawn Part 2 has that one. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, never mind. Breaking Dawn Part 1. It's like Breaking Dawn Part 1. Actually, it is a lot like Breaking Dawn Part 1. But yeah, it's going to be a wild ride, and I can't wait to watch this shit again. So
I can't wait to finally tell Sydney why it's so important to me that she engages with this film. So
I'm doing
no spoilers for now, but just you wait for next week.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of our signs episode, and then we have to come up with a poll question now. So, a funny poll for signs.
What was that exponential question that you had?
Does free will exist? Write a 500-word essay.
Does free will exist in the in the world of in the world of science, does free will exist? Yes or no? That's
no,
the whole question.
In this world that we live in right now.
In today's universe, do you think that free will can exist within God having a larger plan for our universe?
Yeah. Inside of God's plan.
Consult your religious leader and report back. Do you think that Drake believes in free will?
Yeah, do you think Drake believes in free will?
That's the question. I'll do that one. How about that? And then I'll make the other one type anything you want about free will versus predestination. Oh, okay, cool. Well, that's great. Well, you know, also, why not soothe our worried, tired brains contemplating these big questions about free will by saying something nice like, you're so good at podcasting, with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or a 5-star rating on Spotify. You should do it. I think it would be good for your skin, honestly. That's what I've heard. That's the thing that's been going around. That's
I
really
hear
good
it really clears
skin.
Up your skin. Yeah.
Really clears up your skin.
You don't even need to buy snail mucus. You just need to leave that review.
Yeah. It'll that I time. Also I did buy snail mucus and so I think
that's
that
because
is
you
helpful,
can't leave
but...
a review on your own podcast you exactly. had to buy the snail mucus, but everybody I else know. Can save their money,
save yourself the $20 or whatever the fuck, and write a 5-star review. Also follow us on social media. We're at Spooky_Tuesday on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram, and also YouTube. Help us get to 150 subscribers. We are also on Facebook and Tumblr at Spooky Tuesday Pod, and we're on Letterboxd at Spooky Tuesday. And so I will say to you, thank you for listening, and see you next Tuesday. Bye, Spookies!
Morgan, this crop stuff is about a bunch of nerds who never had a girlfriend in their lives. They're like 30, and they work up little codes together, and they analyze Greek mythology and make up secret societies where other guys who never had girlfriends before can join in. They do stupid crap like this to feel special. It's a scam. Nerds were doing it 25 years ago, new nerds are doing it again.
Spooky Tuesday was created by Monica Height, Sydney Thompson, and Chelsea Duff, and edited by Sydney Thompson. Our gorgeously spooky tunes are all thanks to Tamra Simons, who you can follow on Instagram at Captain Tamra, and our podcast art is by Mary Murphy, who you can find on Instagram at the_moon_OMG.